Welcome everybody back to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast. I am your host, Andrew, and as always, my co-host Matt is here with me. Matt, just a short while ago, we went through the offensive tackles in this coming 2024 class, and now the next big time position, seemingly encompassing the entire class at times, the wide receiver position. I don't think it's hyperbole to say this is the most talented wide receiver group we've seen since at least 2016. 2020, maybe. I think it's better than 2020.
Probably. I would imagine it's a very good class.
Yeah, the talent level from top to bottom is just overwhelming. And we're going to go through our individual top tens just like we did the offensive tackles. But it is not insane to say that there are a lot of guys we could spend talking about after that 10th rank. I have multiple players outside my top 10 that I really, really like and think are going to be good players. And some of them you have in your top 10 and I don't, and vice versa. And you can still see the argument for why these guys are going to succeed. It really is just such a talented group overall. And all of these guys are clustered in a lot of ways so close in overall grade that what you value in your evaluations, what really matters to you the most and how you grade players is really going to determine the order at the end of the day. That said, Matt, I want to throw things to you first things first. Go through your top 10, then I will rip through mine, and we'll go through our favorite guys on day one, day two, and day three.
All right, I'll start from 10 and go backwards. So rounding up the top 10, I have Malik Washington out of Virginia. At number 9, I have Jalen Polk from Washington. Number 8, I have Jalen McMillan from Washington. A lot of Washington guys in this top 10. Number 7, I have Ricky Pearsall from Florida. Number 6, I have Ladd McConkley from Georgia. 5, I have Adonai Mitchell from Texas. 4, Brian Thomas from LSU. 3, Romo Odunze from Washington. And Marvin Harrison of Ohio State at 2, and Neighbors at 1.
That is a good list. That is a good list. I'm trying to go and cross-reference right now. I think we only have 2 differences in our top 10 in terms of players overall. I think there's only 2 slight differences there. I'll rip through mine 10 to 1, just like you. 10, Javon Baker from UCF. Number 9, Xavier Worthy from Texas. 8, Ricky Pearsall, just like you had on yours as well. 7, Ladd McConkey from Georgia. 6, Malik Washington from Virginia. 5, Jalen Polk from Washington. 4, Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. 3, Malik Neighbors from LSU. 2, Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State. And my number 1 receiver personally for me is Romo Odunze from Washington.
Who is your number 10 again?
Javon Baker from UCF.
Oh, Baker. That's right. So let's see. Baker and Worthy, I think, are the 2 guys that I don't have. And I have McMillan and... Polk? Yeah. No, you have Polk.
No, I have Polk. You have McMillan, and you have Adonai Mitchell.
Oh, yes. Oh, which you don't have. That's a little surprising.
No, I think that's going to be a discussion. Maybe we save that to round out the show at the end on our difference on A.D. Mitchell, because I am very much not a fan of his. And I'm curious to hear your take for having him number 5 overall. And I know I trust your evaluations with a lot of certainty. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I'll let you go ahead and start leading off with your favorite day one option at wide receiver for the New York Jets would be.
Well, so I have this feeling that none of the top 3 wide receivers are going to make it to 10. So really the only way that we pretty much get a wide receiver, I think, is either with a trade back or with a trade up back into the first. So I'm starting to look at the wide receivers that would probably round out the first round. So my favorite guy that's probably realistic in that area would be Ladd McConkey from Georgia. I just love what this guy brings to the table. His route running, his ability to go up and get the ball. I think he's going to be a quarterback's best friend. I can see him having a very long career, being an inside guy, outside guy. I think he has the ability to play either. I think he'll make a home more on the inside. But he's got a great ability of getting that the yak. He's got great explosion out of his brakes. He's very smooth as well. Put it all together, you have a guy that's going to get separation. I kind of remember seeing a chart that had last year's wide receivers and this year's wide receivers, and you had guys like Garrett Wilson who would be all the way on the top of the charts when it came to separation in man coverage, and then right at the top of the charts for who got the most separation in production in zone, it would be McConkey. So if you put those two together, you have pretty much a dynamic duo that makes it impossible to really, you know, single anyone out with a single type of coverage, and having that ability to really be flexible and to just attack them in different ways, I think would do wonders for our offense and just for in the league altogether. It would probably put us near the top if you put a trio of McConkey, Wilson, and Mike Williams. I think the three of them together would be an incredible group right there and really hard to stop.
Yeah, no, I really like that trio. Fitting Ladd in with that spot. Man, probably mainly in the slot, you would imagine, in that scenario, with Mike Williams definitely on the outside. And then where's Garrett Wilson going to be better used if Ladd McConkey's the other option? Most likely on the opposite outside. But McConkey could do some damage inside for the Jets in that pairing for sure. I think one of the reasons he's so good against zone is that he's such a good improvisational route runner, and that when he gets zone coverage and the corner will drop off of him and turn a certain way that's not a man turn, where he's not getting a straight press or he's not, you know, bailing and running with him as you would if you're getting towards the sideline and pressing to the outside, and you get that inside man zone turn, the corner opens up to the inside. He's so good at recognizing that so quick, getting into the blind spot. And then even it could be the exact same route that he would run, you know, in the huddle. You're going to call an out route at 12 yards, lad. That's what we're calling for you on this play. If it's man, he's going to run it a completely different way than if it's zone. And I really think that's part of what makes him so effective, beyond the fact that he's just a really, really good athlete. And I don't think people are mentioning that. Like, this guy ran 4.39. I think he jumped like 37 inches at the combine. You see on tape, he has the leaping ability to go up and get it. He can be strong through contact and make plays through contact. Absolutely just guts people with his routes. And there really hasn't been, at least over the last couple of years, a dominant receiving threat at Georgia to draw attention away from him besides Brock Bowers. And Brock Bowers being, you know, the tight end that they utilize in motion is an exceptional option, and I'm sure defenses focus on him. But in terms of coverage dictation at wide receiver down the field, how often is Brock Bowers lining up at X and McConkey's in the slot and they're running a switch release? I didn't see it that often. And so when it comes to the real outside of the field, away from the interior, away from the deep middle, in that area, that's kind of Ladd's area. It'll just thrive. And I could really see him doing some damage with that Jets and that pairing in those areas of the field. Garrett's going to be, you know, able to go anywhere you want him to, short, deep, underneath, vertical, doesn't matter. Mike Williams is that boundary option. And then you have Ladd on the other opportunity to come in from the slot, either get open over the middle, get back to the outside, fight that zone coverage. I really like that fit a lot.
Yeah, I like the ability to get the yards after catch too. I think that is something that goes a little under the radar in terms of what they really like. They love guys that can just get those extra yards no matter how they get it, whether it's through a burst, whether it's through manipulation, or whether it's through just plain old just jukes and cuts and just a balance through contact. These are the guys that we want on our offense, the guys that can just get that little bit extra. And I think he fits right in with that.
Yeah, he has a mentality of a much bigger receiver, where he's not afraid of contact. He's not afraid to fight for extra yards. He has moves in the open field. He's just playing fast and hard to grab and runs away from people in the SEC. you know, there's a ton to like with Ladd McConkey. A back of the first round, you know, you get a wild offer for 10th overall and there's no one that you feel comfortable picking, or, you know, it's the Chiefs and they want to trade up for some crazy wide receiver and they offer you 2 years of first round picks and a second this year. And you can't say no when you get towards that back end of round one. I don't think Ladd would be a bad option at all.
Yeah, you could do far worse.
Yeah, you could definitely, definitely do far worse. I also think you could do far better, and I don't think I'm insulting Ladd McConkey or your pick, Matt, by saying that. As of now, as we sit here at the beginning of April, a few weeks out from the NFL draft, there is still a less than 0% chance that Romo Dunze gets to the New York Jets at 10th overall. And
less than zero
or greater than zero. Excuse me. I'm using my jinx powers in reverse. See, this is reverse psychology. It's called, or so I've been told.
Make it so.
There's still a chance that Odunze could get to 10. I also think there's a chance that if he gets to 8, the Jets might call and just say, what would it take? Not saying they would be aggressively pursuing, but I think that they would maybe place a call just to get a feeler out there and get an idea from the Falcons and go, well, you know, if it really doesn't cost that much, do we want to just go get Rome? I don't think that's completely and totally out of the question either. And Romo Dunze is just such a special player in my eyes. He's my number one wide receiver. And the reason he's my number one wide receiver is that I can't find a weakness. Like none. Yeah, he's not outright borderline elite in any particular, you know, particular category, maybe besides ball tracking, contested catches and body control. But outside of that, he doesn't do anything crazy elite, but he does everything else at least great. And there is a difference between great and elite, but everything else is, if it's not great, it's still really pretty good and definitely not anything he has to work on. I'm every single game I watched of him, I'm just going, what do you do wrong? I'm not even looking for the positive at that point. I had gotten through 4 or 5 games at Romo Dunze and I'm like, okay, I know you're great. What can you do something wrong once? Can you not read your leverage properly once and break at the right time? Can you not make an incredible, you know, spectacular catch down the sideline with a body draped all over you because Penix was getting pressured and he just chucked it up and trusted you? Can you not adjust your body and pirouette spin in midair and catch a goal line fade and land in the end zone and get your feet in bounds? Can you not take a screen over the middle on a tunnel screen as a wide receiver, cut inside, juke out a linebacker, bounce off a safety and pick up an extra 12 yards for a first down on third down? Over and over and over, he just does everything you ask of him and does it all so well. His routes are crisp. His tracking is awesome. His hands are great. I think he's more explosive than he gets credit for. He ran in the 4.4s at the combine. His burst off the line is so underrated. He threatens vertically so quick. He's a long strider, so he doesn't get, you know, it doesn't look like he's moving as quickly, but he gets up on corners in a flash. And once he does, then they're in, you know, they're his playthings. He can do whatever he wants. He can make whatever cutter movement he wants. And if somehow, some way they're able to run with him anyway, he's just going to go up and out man them and get the football regardless. It's such a weird evaluation for me, Matt, because it's almost like I got to a point where I'm like, I got frustrated, where it's not like I'm watching this guy who's awesome and going, wow, this is great. I'm watching this guy who's awesome and going, what is going on? I don't understand how you can be this good at everything all the time. And his overall numerical grade just was the highest I had in this wide receiver class. And I trust my grading scale that I put a lot of time into crafting. It wasn't much higher than Marvin Harrison. I'm not trying to sit here and act like, you know, there's this gigantic, gigantic gap between the two of them. But Rome is just so polished, still so full of potential, proven, and one of the safest picks, I think, in this draft, bar none. If he is within striking distance for the Jets, I'm not saying they should do it 110%, make it happen, but if you place a call to Atlanta and all it takes is 72 and a third next year, And you can go up and get Romo Dunze in a win now year when you have your starting tackles filled out, even though we talked about last week how it really is the smarter and safer pick to go offensive tackle at 10. I can't sit here and lie and say that I wouldn't be excited about adding Romo Dunze to this receiving core.
Yeah, it would be hard to pass him up. I know some people are like, oh, we got Mike Williams, so we can't get Odunze. I'm like, no. Odunze is the complete package here, and Mike Williams is maybe here 1 year. And that's only if he stays healthy, too. So having a guy like Odunze and Mike Williams, I think, gives you such an advantage in the air that we haven't had. I mean, we had Marshall at one point, and he kind of embodied that receiver that can really just dominate the verticals and just making leaps and leaping catches above everybody else's head because nobody else can get that as high as him. I have all three of these top wide receivers graded very closely as well. I go back and forth. Who's going to be number one? Who's number two? Who's number three? It's been very hard to really nail down any one person in that top spot. It's really kind of like, what do you value more? I value Neighbors' ability to get more yak more than Odunze's. And just for that alone, I have him above Odunze. But it's really hard to really nitpick, because that's what you're doing at this point. It's just nitpicking if you're really just trying to find something to separate them. But it's with Odunze, one thing I notice is that he is just very smart. As soon as he's off that line of scrimmage, he is setting defensive backs up for what he wants. It's his game. Everybody else is reacting to him, and they have to deal with him. And it's almost impossible to do because he's a couple steps ahead of everybody. Whether it's just adjusting his speeds to set people up, whether it's using leverage, or whether it's just overpowering somebody. You don't know what you're going to get, and even if you do, it would be hard to really do anything about it. You really can't go wrong with Odunze.
No, I really don't think you can. We were talking about offensive tackles just a little bit ago, Matt. I was talking about J.C. Latham in the sense that you see rushers just try everything they have and every move that they possibly know to try and get around J.C. Latham, and they can't, because the second he grabs them, he shuts them down. And you watch that frustration build and build, and it gives you that sense that Latham just has an answer for everything. I feel like Odunze is that exact same way, but a wide receiver. Where it's like, you want to press him? Okay, he's great with his hands. He's absolutely made of steel and doesn't get phased by contact whatsoever, whether it's in the middle of the route or at the release. His quick feet, able to give multiple releases, able to give the quick jab step and accelerate outside, can do a slow play release and do the little pitter patter and then accelerate. He can just straight up blow off the line and explode and get vertical. He has all of those in his toolbox. And you try and press him, he beats your hands, he gives you that outside. He's got enough acceleration and juice to get down the field and get open, and you're not going to catch him at that point. Okay, you can't press him. So we'll play off. We'll back up 8-9 yards. We'll give him the space. We'll let our corner say, okay, you know, let the route come to you, give you some extra help, play from the top down, all that. And Rome just starts laughing in the huddle, because now he's going to sell every route like a 9 route, eat up that cushion immediately. And the second he gets the corner turned, he just gets in their blind spot like Ladd, flips and goes the other way. And if it ends up in the same spot that he was intended to go for Penix, who cares what the route looks like? Who cares if it's not the actual designed how it was on the play sheet of, this is going to be a square post corner that you're going to run, and you're going to do your cut in off your second step, and you're going to jab outside at 45 degrees. If it takes him an extra little shuffle because the corner's got outside leverage at the top of the route, he takes a third step before he cuts instead of a second, but he ends up with 5.5 yards of separation for a big play, who cares? That's next level receiver stuff to me, in the sense that you are able to immediately identify what is happening in front of you, know where you need to be, know what time you need to get there at, and know that the can immediately sort out the best path to do so and the best way to get this defender off you. And worst case scenario, if they don't get off of you, he's arguably the best contested catch player in this draft too, just for good measure. It's like, even if not when, if you are able to cover him, it almost still doesn't matter. And he can make some plays after the catch. Not as good as Neighbors, not even close, don't get me wrong, but it's not like he can't do it. It's not like it's a weakness to his game. It's something he's good at, not great at or elite at. There's just, I don't have a negative. And I don't know if I've ever had a prospect like that, where I can legitimately just sit here and go, there's nothing I can point to and say, this is a fault. This is something he needs to get better at, something he needs to improve on. There's nothing. And like you were talking about nitpicking through this top three, that's what it came down to for me as well. Where with Marvin Harrison, I think he's a really, really great athlete. I would have really liked to see him test at some point and see that 40 time, because I'm a little bit, just the tiniest bit worried about the fact of what is your top end speed and your overall ceiling. And you can get open with your routes. You can create separation. You can be explosive off the line, and you can still go up and get the football with your size too. But what's it going to look like against the elite of the elite super freak athlete corners? Are you going to be able to separate in that same category? For Neighbors, it's ability to make catches in traffic. He can, when he gets the ball in space, if there's not anybody immediately there to tackle him, good luck. His acceleration and burst is just unfair. But if you are on him and he's got bodies on his back, he really struggles to just maintain the football in those contested situations and be a receiver that makes plays and keeps the offense going more than just being open and making plays in space. He's one of the best playmakers in space you could ever hope for, which makes up for a lot, but that's that little nitpick that separated for me. I just don't have anything for Rome, and it's crazy to say that.
Yeah. And I, like I said last week, I want a tackle in the first round. And the only thing that would make me abandon that is if Odunze somehow makes it to 10. I just, there's just some guys that you can't pass on if they make it there. Bowers is there, I could pass. If Odunze is there, yep, I can't. I'm running that card up, and I'll figure left tackle out at some other point or trade back into the first and see what we can do. It would just be too good to be true. And I don't think JD would pass up this chance, because when guys like Odunze and Garrett Wilson fall into his lap, he doesn't pass on them. He will definitely see the talent that's there on the table and take it.
Yeah, that's best player available, Joe Douglas, right there. And it would be justified and completely true. Is that this is the best guy left on the board by a wide margin, and there's no reason not to take him. I've seen a lot of people float comparisons out to him for Devontae Adams, and I can definitely see that. But, and I know this is high praise, but I don't care. The way he is the combination of a route artist, a bully with the ball in the air, and an explosive playmaker after the catch, and a vertical threat, and has great hands and can be reliable in contested situations and keep the chains moving. He reminds me of Larry Fitzgerald. And that's very, very, very high praise. But that's the sense I get from watching him at wide receiver, which is like, take the play, take the coverage, take the quarterback, take everything else out of the equation. If you have this guy in your passing game, he's going to find a way to win, period. And that is a rare, rare skill, and that's what elite receivers do.
It really is, and he's got no shortage of elite traits, and it would be a privilege to have him on our team.
Yeah, 110%. 110%. Let's jump on to day two here. Matt, who you got for day two?
For day two, I'm going to go with Odunze's running mate on the inside, Jalen McMillan. Watching this guy move is something special. He's probably got one of the best acceleration and second gears that you can find in this class. As soon as he's got that ball, you can just see how fast he is compared to everybody else running around him, and how he will shoot through gaps and find even the littlest hole and blast off right through it. You can tell how he moves when he in and out of breaks, that acceleration that allows him to just get separation constantly. If you add that with his ability to get yards after catch with just that pure speed, he is a dangerous, dangerous guy to have the ball in his hands. He is more of a slot guy, but at the same time, I can see him really, you know, finding a home there on the inside and making that his own and being a target for Rodgers or anybody down the line. He's not just a guy that would thrive under Rodgers. He's a guy that would thrive under anybody. And I love guys with speed, a speed like his. I think he only ran about 4.47, but you can tell on in the game tape that he is the second to none when it comes to speed on the field. I think he's got extremely big hands too. I think he's got 10-inch on the dot hands and 32-inch arms as well. So he's got the ability to make catches away from his body, snag those balls out of the air. His contested catch rate isn't as high as I would like it to be, but at the same time, it's not in a zone where I would really worry about it. Along with his drops as well, I think he's well within the range where I'd be very comfortable taking him. I have him as a mid to late second round pick, so there's a good chance that he could make it to the third round in pick 72. It's hard to say because there's so many good wide receivers in this class. They could either be a giant run on it that goes 2 to 3 rounds, or all the other talent gets pushed back and people jump on them and then wide receivers get pushed back. So it's hard to say who's going to go where or when, but it would be a really good thing if he can make it to the third round, or if we trade into the second round to be able to get him there. I think we could do many things with this guy. We could be creative. Once we get rid of our offensive coordinator and bring somebody else in, I think they can take this guy's talent and really take advantage of him.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with drafting guys who can make plays with the ball in their hands and just stacking a lot of them on your team. That is a good idea for pretty much every team in the NFL. And McMillan's one of those guys where he's not small. He's 6'1", 193, and he's got a good size, good build. He's not just some shifty little slot receiver. Although ultimately, I think that's where he'll end up spending most of his time in the pros. But he has that shifty slot receiver agility, movement, like glidingness in his running style, where it just looks so effortless as he runs. And that really makes him just a really just smooth route runner as well, where he can get in and out of his cuts really easily. He's got a really good ID for zone coverage, especially over the middle. He knows how to settle in between linebackers and safeties, find the soft spots. Can make the contested plays in traffic. I really liked him as well. He didn't make my top 10. He was just outside. I had him actually at 11. So he was knocking on the door right behind there. Troy Franklin from Oregon, another player who's an explosive yards after catch, vertical threat, etc. type of player, was there at 12. Right within that range. And I really think he could fit the role that you're describing, Matt, where it's just stacking as many guys that can do something for you with the ball in their hands, make a play in space that you can design plays for, and take a 5-yard pitch, you know, 5-yard drag route and run up the field for 45 and score. There's no such thing as having too many of those guys. And considering that he also can be a solid possession player over the middle and can adjust his body between zones and do all the dirty slot work that you would need a slot receiver like that to do, you know, he wouldn't have to be subbed out for somebody else. It's just, it makes him really valuable. And if he's there day 3, if it's pick 72 and the Jets need a wide receiver, if Jalen McMillan's on the board, I think that would be a great pick.
Yeah, when it comes to speed, I can't get enough of these guys that can really just take it to the house at any moment when they have the ball in their hands. If you can do that, you're gonna flash in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a proven way to win. If you can be explosive and agile as a wide receiver, usually it means that you can run some decent routes as well, because you need to be explosive and agile to run those routes effectively. So having that trait is definitely not something to look away from. My pick for day two, funnily enough, another Jalen from the University of Washington and teammate of Romo Odunze, and that's Jalen Polk. Jalen Polk is a little bit on the opposite end. He's not quite as explosive, although he did run a 4.52, which is not that far off from McMillan at the combine. But on tape, there's definitely more of a difference. Even still, I don't think that his speed is an absolute crushing blow, because he is so quick to accelerate off the line. He had a 1.52 10-yard split, which is really, really solid. He's got good size. He's 6'1", 203 pounds. Had a 37.5-inch vertical and a 10'9" broad jump, so you can see that explosiveness. And as a wide receiver, ultimately you want to have the speed to separate downfield after you make the play off the line of scrimmage. But you need that explosiveness off the line of scrimmage to get in that position in the first place. So if you can have one or the other, if it's long speed or short speed, you always want to have short speed. And I think Polk definitely has that in spades. What really just sells me on Jalen Polk is his ability to absorb contact either through his routes or at the catch point, put himself in 1,000,000,000% harm's way time and time again, get his body absolutely destroyed by defenders, never drop the ball unless he's quite literally getting hit in the head, and get up and bounce up and run up for the next play like it was no big deal. And it's like Jalen McMillan took the hardest hit I've seen all year three times this game and didn't miss a play and converted a big, 15-yard completion every time he did it. That type of ability, that type of mentality, I think just breathes through your wide receiver room. And you need one of those guys to just willing to do whatever they can and sacrifice themselves to make sure they come down with the ball. It really stuck out to me when I started watching the Washington offense. I love this entire offense. So quick side tangent. Michael Penix is great. We talked about Fautanu last week. Odunze is my wide receiver one. Polk's my wide receiver five. McMillan was at 11. There's a lot of good players on this team. And I think Polk's getting lost in the shuffle a little bit. And I really think he deserves a bit more credit.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to deep threats, he is one near the top of my list as well. I love the way that he can make catches away from his body, especially when tracking the ball. He's got a way of just making it look very easy to catch balls over his shoulder in traffic. And he's got the game speed is definitely a lot faster than his testing speed. Definitely. So I'm not worried about that. I think he would be a nice addition, because when was the last time we had a solid, pure deep threat on the outside? I'm having a hard time thinking of who that would have been. But it's something that we could use, because I believe that Rodgers loves passing it deep on the boundary. That's his bread and butter, just chucking it down the field and having guys run under it. And I think Polk can really, play that position to a T. There's the only thing I would maybe nitpick about him is that his ability in and out of breaks to really show that burst. He does have that burst off the line, but just in and out of breaks, I would just like to see it a little bit more, just to gain that extra bit of separation when not just doing a 9-route.
Yeah, you would like to see him be able to be a bit more loose, I guess would be the word, in his routes. But I see potential in him to get better in that area. I think it's something that can be coached to be improved, where it's not, it's just a physical deficiency that he can't ever change or get better. You see the way he can contort his body in the air. He can adjust for fade routes, that he can fight through contact and dip underneath press when he's releasing vertical. This guy is really flexible and really balanced and coordinated. And having that sort of control over your body and having the agility that I think shows up in the crucial fight or flight moment of here comes the ball, I got to make a play. If you can translate some of that and get some of that out of him to put it in his routes before he's looking for the ball, I think he can definitely improve. And like you said, his game speed is definitely better than the 4.52. I would have pegged him as like 4.55 a bit going off game tape, which doesn't seem like it's that much of a difference, but it definitely is when you're talking about on the field in a game of inches. I really, really like Jalen Polk. I'm just confident that this guy is going to find a way to win and has that mentality of, I can get myself open and I'll make a play if I get myself open. And if I don't get myself open, doesn't matter. I'm going to make a play anyway. And I value that so highly for wide receivers.
Where do you have him right now going? In late second or third round?
My grade on him does not reflect where I think he will go. I am higher on him than I think his draft position will indicate. I think he's a late first round player. And I think off my grade, I think he goes somewhere between the middle to end of round two.
Okay, that's fair. I think that's kind of exactly where I have him as well. I mean, I think I have something like 18 or 19 guys with
right
a first or second round grade, which is wild. So I could definitely see him falling into that range.
Yeah, I definitely could. I wouldn't be surprised if a team at the end of the first round, you know, really, really loves him and a ton more wide receivers go than we think, even. And we're at 8 wide receivers, and everyone who thought, oh, we can wait until round two and get our guys, all of a sudden that isn't an option. I could see a team falling for Jalen Polk's profile and taking him at the back end of round one. It would be very, very surprising, but I wouldn't be completely and totally just stunned.
No, I wouldn't be stunned either. But that's actually the best part about this class, is that there could be a giant run on wide receivers in the first and second round, and there probably would still be a good amount of talent that makes it into day three.
It really is that crazy. You're going to have starting receivers coming out of this class that are going to be fourth and fifth round picks. And speaking of, Matt, I think that brings us to your day three guy. Tell us about Jamari Thrash at Louisville.
Jamari Thrash. He was a guy that I watched early, and he really caught my eye. Since we're talking about deep threats, I think he also fits the bill as a deep threat. He's 6 foot, 188. He ran a 4.46 with a 1.54 10-yard split. He's got the speed, and he's got the suddenness in his game to really play the short, the intermediate routes as well as be a deep threat. The only thing I think that he kind of lacks is the play strength to really be an outside guy full-time. Unlike Polk, I don't see him having that play strength to really be a boundary guy consistently. But at the same time, his speed and ability to really use leverage and to just stack the defenders and really get on top of his routes just makes him a valuable asset no matter where he lines up, whether it's in the slot or on the outside. He will find a way to get separation, and it will just do wonders for him to be able to use everything that he has in his tool belt with his ability in and out of breaks, the smoothness to his routes, and just the suddenness that I mentioned before. You can play off 10 yards just because you know he's going to eat up that cushion very quickly, and then he'll just stop on a dime, and now you have to make up that distance, and he will take that every single time and then also turn it into yards after catch. I think he's got something like 6.6 average yards after catch, which puts him near the top I think you have Corley at the very, very top with like 8 point something average, but he is not too far behind with 6 points. So I want to say, but it's high up there. So I don't see him being, you know, like I said, the full time outside guy, but in certain situations, outside on and mostly inside, I think he would be a valuable weapon.
Yeah, like we talked about before, I feel like the theme of all your guys is somebody who can be explosive, create separation, and make plays with the ball in their hands.
Good attributes to have.
Right. No, that's not bad things to want. Not whatsoever. Thrash is interesting. He's a player I haven't really gotten a chance to study as much as I would really have liked to yet. What I do know and what I have seen, he transferred from Georgia State to Louisville. So we jump in competition, went from D2 to jumping into D1 in the ACC, and didn't seem to really skip a beat. It didn't seem like the level of competition changing had any real effect on him. He was still effective. He was still running by people with ease. That's a really good sign for his development going forward. I really, really, really like his ability to sink his hips in his breaks. You were talking about that charge up field vertical and then slam on the brakes and stop down and come back to the football. And he can go from being so upright, trying to fully open up and sprint, to so low in his break when he's coming back to the ball. That is not easy to do. And it gives me hope that that can translate into other routes in the future, because he is a bit vertically focused right now. And if you're Louisville, why wouldn't he be? To be completely honest, it's not like, you know, they're doing something they shouldn't be with his talent. But I would like to see him get a bit more developed and refined in the dirty work of wide receivers going over the middle, you know, taking the pass underneath and with the guy over your back on third and one and being able to convert the tough play in traffic. I think he's got room to get better there, but it's not something he can't do.
No, absolutely not. I don't think it's something that he can't do. And I think that if he can also work on his just general play strength, that would also do wonders for letting him to have more time on the outside. Just being able to get off that press and to really, you know, use that sideline to his advantage and not be really taking advantage of it. So I think he's definitely got room to grow. This is his fifth year, I believe, so he's a little bit older than some other prospects. So I definitely have him going in day three, where maybe around the late third, early fourth round, I can see him going. And if we haven't taken a wide receiver at that point, he is squarely in my sights.
Yeah, I don't think he would be a bad option at all. He is the type of player right now where he does all of his damage if you don't get your hands on him. And if you can get your hands on him, it's a bit tougher. But if it's a scary thing to want to do that, because he's so explosive and so quick and fast to be able to get vertical and get down the field and turn any play into a touchdown, that you're really worried to get hands on him, because if you miss your jam, then you're screwed. And he lives in that pocket of what elite speed does for you at wide receiver, for guys like Xavier Worthy, for guys like Troy Franklin, for guys like Tamari Thrash. In this draft class in particular, everybody knows they are so fast that they don't want to get up right on them and make contact and disturb their route and take away their runway. And in turn, that ends up being what kills them. Because they're so scared, then these guys know, okay, so all I have to do is charge at him full speed and he's going to be terrified and he's going to flip and turn and run. And after that, I can run whatever route I want. I can make whatever cut I want. I can go whichever direction I want. You know, it's plays are the second you've looked away from me, the route's already over. I win. And once you can develop that along with the other parts of fighting through contact and beating press at the line, when they do decide, okay, screw it, we're sick of giving you free cushions all game long, we're going to get in your face. Once you can show that you can beat that, then you almost become unguardable. And I think he has that potential in him to get better and become a really effective player.
Yeah, the only thing that I can see hindering his progress that he can't change is his small hands. I think he's got some decently small hands. I don't have the number.
I got that for you right here. 8 5/8 inches.
So,
which is definitely on the small on side the smaller for side. Any player, let alone a wide receiver.
And I think that leads to some of his drops is just not having the hand strength to really just bring in some of the tougher catches, in especially in contested situations. So that's the only thing that I think can really hold him back from developing into one of the top flight deep threats that he can be.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely got the pathway to do it. There is a clear and obvious path of development for this guy to continue to get better. And he may not be that effective for you in year one outside of a couple of select situations, but you give him some time to grow and he's going to be a valuable piece of your receiving room.
But that's why he's day three.
And that's why he's day three. Exactly. Those are the type of guys that you're going to see. My guy for day three, Matt, I have, this might be the biggest discrepancy I have in terms of how high I am on a player and how low the NFL is, or at least perceiving to be how low the NFL is. And quite honestly, I don't think the NFL is low on Malik Washington from Virginia, my day three pick. I think everyone knows he's good. There's just so many other good wide receivers in this class that he's being forgotten about because he played at Virginia and they were a horrible team. And then you go back and look at the numbers for Malik Washington this past year. He transfers from Northwestern in 2023. It was his fifth year. So like Jamari Thrash, guy who wins with explosiveness and speed, and threatening vertically, in his fifth year, transferred from another school for a better opportunity. And in his lone year at Virginia, he has 110 receptions for 1,426 yards and 9 touchdowns. The Virginia offense, people, was the worst offense I saw on film this year, outside of Malik Washington. Their offensive line was a travesty. Their quarterback could not hit the broadside of a barn most of the time. There was no opportunity for routes to develop down the field and let wide receivers get open and give them time to set corners up and break away and give that big play for, you know, a big touchdown. The offense just wasn't built for it. It was also an option, triple option run game, heavy focused offense with receivers, screens and bubbles mixed in here and there that only like to attack down the field every so often. And despite there being zero talent around him, despite playing in a horribly designed offense, despite having no quarterback to rely on to consistently get him the football, and nobody else to draw coverage away from him, Malik Washington catches 110 passes for over 1,400 yards in the ACC in his first year in the ACC. Just off a pure situation and volume perspective, that's an incredible, incredible performance. And then you get to his tape, and you immediately see why that happened. Malik Washington was probably the best player on the field in every game that I watched of him in the ACC, directly against the opponents he was playing against on defense. I don't care that he's 5'8 and 194 pounds. He's short. So be it. He's not small. 194 pounds isn't small. He's got inch hands. Right. He's got 9¼-inch hands, which is bigger than Thrash. And Thrash is 2 inches taller. He plays bigger. He fights through contact like someone who's 6'2". He beats press at the line like Jalen Polk in a way where it's like it almost doesn't even faze him. He can be making breaks over the middle of the field and have guys draped over his back and fighting through the contact as he's at the catch point. If it's 3rd and 7 and you're running that glance route on the RPO and the corner's just sitting at the first down marker waiting for you to make your break, he can have that happen, take the contact, absorb it, not even get phased, keep running, break open, and then catch the ball with his extended arms. An important thing to note, with great hands in time, on in stride, turn and run immediately, and then make a play after the catch. 4.47 in the 40, 1.53 10-yard split, 42.5-inch vertical, 10.6 broad jump, and 19 reps on the bench just to boot. This dude's an athlete. This dude is an athlete, and he plays like an athlete. He can, at 5'8", go up and get the football in contested catch situations. And just with a 42.5-inch vertical, just out-jump people and make the catch anyway. You see it on film. The 5'8 slot receiver is out-jumping the 6'1 safety, and he's doing it over and over and over again. He is so dangerous with his routes. And I really think he doesn't get enough credit for this. You can't play man against Malik Washington. You can't play man. It's not an option. It's not something that you can reliably expect to do and get away with it, because he is so immediately explosive out of his breaks that he doesn't need the corner to fully turn and flip their hips in order to get the separation that he needs. The second they even start, he can put his foot in the ground and go bang, cut to the inside. And they don't even have an opportunity to redirect their momentum. And he's wide open. He can freeze people at the line of scrimmage with his releases and then go right up to the outside down the field, and they have no shot. There's not even a remote chance that they can keep running with him. Even if they get hands on and they get contact, he's so good at breaking away. You want to try and press him? What's the 3rd-and-7 glance situation? Again, you want to try and press him at the line and stop him from running that slant? He's going to swat your hands like he's DK Metcalf and beat you on the slant anyway. And the craziest part all is to go back and remember, there was a ton of plays where Malik Washington absolutely cooks a corner and the quarterback is sacked before he can even look up. Where Washington is running an RPO to the backside and he's running that glance route and he gives a two-step stutter at the top of his route and freezes the corner in quicksand and is 7 yards past him waiting for a touchdown that he's going to walk in for a score, and the quarterback is looking the other direction and airballs a ball outside out of bounds. There's so many things like that that happen, and he still had 1,400 yards this year. Like, that is insane to me. I believe Virginia went 2-10, 2-11 in the ACC this year. They were horrible. They were absolutely horrendous, except for Malik Washington. And it didn't matter the entire season, stepping in a new place, in a new conference, at a different level of competition, and just absolutely cooking people for the entire year with no help. It's really amazing. I'm having a really hard time not giving him a first round grade, Matt.
I do have a first round grade.
Okay, then good. Then we're on the same page. This dude's a first round wide receiver. Like, I'm sorry, he is.
He's the one guy I can see jumping into the first round, and people are like, "What, really? This 5'8" guy in the first round?" Yeah, he's that good. He's got everything you could ever want in a wide receiver. Sure, he doesn't have the size, but he plays big, like we said. I think he only had one game, I think, in this year where he didn't have 100 yards. He had something like over 130 targets. When you have a guy that teams know that they're the only threat and he can still do everything that he wants to them, that's somebody you want on your team. Because if you put that in an offense with all the other stars that we have, that makes him even more dangerous. I can't praise this guy enough, especially with his body control, his ability to really hide his hands until the last minute. His ability
tracking is excellent.
Yep, his tracking is amazing. His even when his quarterback's in trouble, who's in a trouble a lot, he would work his way open. He would work back to the ball. He would find a way to get open and be that friendly target for his quarterback. And you know, when you have a 40-year-old quarterback looking for a friend, you know, I can think of far worse people to have running around trying to get open than this specimen right here, who will fight tooth and nail to get the ball with his very natural soft hands. And then once he has it, then he becomes even more dangerous. There's very few people I can see myself liking more than him.
Put him in an LSU jersey, and I'm telling you, I wouldn't be able to know which Malik is which.
Yeah, it's true. They're like putting these guys again, like, just that speaks to the talent of this class, that you can have neighbors in the top three, and then Washington somewhere who could be a day three guy potentially. and how close they are and how dangerous you can see both of them are and see want either of them and be, and it would be okay. You can make a case for any of these guys. It's really a choose your flavor.
Yeah, no, it really, really is. He's my number one target for pick 72 right now. I think there is a solid chance that he could be available at 72. I don't think that's a stretch. I think it's crazy from a how I value him standpoint, but in terms of where I think he'll actually go in the actual draft, I think the league might see differently or just be so caught up with all the other talent in this class that he's just getting slept on and forgotten about. And I really think people they just see, oh, he's a small wide receiver from Virginia. Yeah, he's probably pretty fast and runs pretty good routes and 1,400 yards. That's awesome. That's great. Like, you don't realize the context that went into having to put up those stats. And then you go to the tape. He's not just catching bubble screens and running for all of his yards. He is beating corners up and down the field over and over. And he'll catch the bubble screen and go 60 up the sideline. And he'll take the 40-yard vertical shot down the sideline in the air and go out, jump the corner and make the play in traffic. And they'll give him the quick little drag route over the middle, and he'll run over a linebacker for a first down. I mean, there's so many little things that he does. His play style and his frame. I want to be very, very clear about my words. I am not saying skill and eventual comparison, but in terms of his body composition and how he plays on the field, it's very Steve Smith-esque.
Yeah, I could see that with a mix of Cotchery too.
Little bit. He's got that. I may be small, but you're not. But I'm the bigger man. You're taller than me, but I'm a bigger man. And he shows it over and over and over again.
Yeah, these are the kinds of guys that you want on your team because they just have the instincts, the state of mind to just do anything they want. And there's nothing you can really do about it.
No, there's nothing you can do about it at all. All right, Matt, before we get out of here, I want to talk about A.D. Mitchell at Texas. I want to hear your case for him being your fifth wide receiver. Go ahead.
So for Adonai Mitchell, I like his size. I like his ability to get off the line and with press and just use his ability to stack defensive backs and get upfield and make the tough catches. His tracking's really good. His speed is really good. His ability to bring in contested catches is very good. I don't see a lot of faults in his game, but I have a feeling you're going to tell me there's a bunch that I'm missing.
I think from a physical perspective, he might be the most physically gifted receiver in this draft. When you look at the combination of size, speed, explosion, agility, vertical leaping ability, catch radius, body control, you know, all of that, I think from a total package, he really might be the best athlete at wide receiver in this draft class. The problem is he doesn't care what's happening on the football field unless the ball is being thrown at him.
All right. So it's more of a state of mind, the anti-Malik Washington.
The anti-Malik Washington, where if he's not the first read in the progression, he runs his route at half speed. And I've seen some people make the argument of, oh, he's just hiding his speed and being deceptive and pacing his routes and he's setting the corner up so we can blow by him. It's like, yeah, well, that's all well and good, but it took 2.5 seconds. And the quarterback's looking the other direction and running the other way at this point. And Adonai Mitchell's 10 yards down the field. When a guy like Malik Washington is going to be 35 yards down the field. When a guy like Xavier Worthy is going to be already 15 yards down the field and now coming back the extra 3 for the comeback. You have to be able to put in the effort to be explosive. And it's more than just an effort in the sense of being a diva wide receiver and I'm not getting the ball. You're only going to catch the wide that corner with the I'm going slow, boom, I'm exploding like once or twice. After that, the corner is going to catch on. He's going to start playing catch technique. He's going to rally and tackle. He's going to say, okay, catch the 2 yard stick route. Go ahead. I'll come up and hit you. And when you try and cut up field, I'm waiting for it. you have to be able to do the opposite and threaten vertically immediately, repeatedly, over and over, and make that corner scared of your vertical speed and scared of your ability to win off the line immediately and ruin the play every single time you take a snap, every single time that you run a route. And until you establish that in a corner's mind as an outside wide receiver, you have to fight through them to win. And once you flip that mentality and you put that fear in their heart, now you dictate the route. Like we were talking about with Odunze earlier, Matt, you brought this up. He's always in control of the route. He is always going to go and make the corner do what he wants him to do. He is going to move wherever he wants to move. He's going to get to whatever spot he wants to get to. He's going to make the corner bend and flip and turn whatever way he wants him to put himself in the best position to run his route. A.D. Mitchell is the opposite. And he just thinks he's so explosive and so athletic and so dominant that he doesn't need to set up his routes on plays when he's not getting targeted. He doesn't need to flash a different release for a corner, even when he knows I'm going to be on the backside of this, you know, three-step quick out and it's not going to be coming to me, I know, but I still want to put this in the corner's head for later in the game when I'm going to run the double move that, oh, you saw me run that quick out and I beat you. And if the quarterback looked at me, it was a good play. Now I'm going to run it again as the first read on the double move and you're going to bite. When you just stand there and take three steps and look at your quarterback when you're on the backside of a progression, it really, really makes me question your commitment. And not just your commitment to the game, but your commitment to the game within the game while the game is going on. And how guys can adapt and develop. I mean, it's not like players are robots and they get done with a play and it's completely and totally wiped out of their memory and there's nothing that can be improved or keyed on or caught as a game is going on. And for a guy with so much potential, with so much talent, I just feel like he's going to have to go to the right spot and the right fit as a team to really unlock all of that and get it out of him. Because if he's just asked to be, you are going to be the focal point on every single play and you're always going to get the ball, that's going to make you be motivated to run your routes effectively and set corners up and take all of this talent and really become this unguardable threat that you can be. If he's not in that position, is he going to respond? Is he going to have that same mindset? And he wouldn't be that for the Jets, for what it's worth. Garrett Wilson is still going to be the number one target, whether A.D. Mitchell thinks otherwise or not. And we saw the horrible effort from Lazard throughout the year and how that really affected the team. This is just, like you said, with Malik Washington, those are the guys you want in your locker room. This is a guy I don't want in my locker room.
Yeah, fair enough. You make a valid case. As somebody that we don't really have the inside knowledge that a lot of scouts do and the coaches do, being able to talk to his coaches, being able to talk to his strength and conditioning guys and to talk to his teammates about him, I would love to be able to get into the minds of these guys and really, you know, sift out those red flags, because yeah, we're kind of just left to see or to kind of tweeze out those red flags just from their game tape. You're saying he would have to go to the right place. I think with a guy with Aaron Rodgers, he would definitely get with that guy and really try to pull every ounce of talent and desire out of him. So I don't think that we're not the wrong place. I don't think that we are the wrong place. Yes, double negative.
No, that's a really good point. It really is. Having the Rodgers effect there to be like, I'm not even going to look at you if you're not taking this seriously. Rodgers isn't going to be the type of guy to coddle him and have him come in and be like, oh, it's okay. Like, yeah, you're so great. You know, take your time, learn along. You'll get the hang of it. It's going to be like, dude, if you do not get to your spot when I expect you to be in your spot, you're not getting the ball. That's it. Like, if you can't do it in practice, then get out of my huddle so I can get my rep. It is going to be a welcome to the NFL moment for him pretty quick. And if he has the mentality to respond and improve and take that motivation and put it to work, he's going to be incredible. He could be the best receiver from this draft class if everything goes well. with his physical profile. That I don't think that's insane to say. I also think that he could be a massive first round bust.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. And yeah, it's just these unknowns that follow a lot of prospects, and you can get a guy that, like Malik Washington, who you know is going to be that hero in the locker room, or you can get the Vernon Golston of wide receivers. So, you know, you got to be careful. And when picking talent in this draft, I want to be as careful as possible. I don't want to take any huge risks. So that's why if we're trading back, I'm looking at McConkey and not Mitchell.
Yeah, I would rather have Ladd for sure. I don't disagree with that. And I just want to say one thing you brought up, as we're basically inferring a player's attitude and dedication based off their game tape, like you said. And that is not easy. That is not something that you can immediately glean unless it's obvious. And I think that's the key for me, is I don't see Xavier Worthy doing that. If Xavier Worthy was doing the same thing, then maybe it's something the coach allows. Maybe it's something the coach is telling them, oh, you're not a progression, don't even worry about it. That's a different story if it's a team-wide issue rather than just a specific player issue. But you don't see Xavier Worthy doing that. You don't see Xavier Worthy choosing not to block people on the backside of plays just because he doesn't think it's going to matter. You don't see Xavier Worthy not run a route after the ball is snapped because it's a quick read and he's the backside of the progression and he's not going to get targeted. You don't see the same lack of desire and effort even in the middle of routes that you need to be running with desire and effort. That it jumped off the screen more than anything else about him to me, Matt. And that's why I feel as strongly as I do. It's not like I saw it a couple of times and I'm like, oh, you know, okay, you know, everyone has a bad day or gets frustrated here and there. You know, they're wide receivers, they're divas, it's how they are. They're all like this. It was immediate and obvious from the first game, and it was in every other game I watched.
I mean, these are all fair points, and you know what? We'll see soon enough.
That we will. I'm quietly hoping the Bills take him, and then he gets around Stephon Diggs, and Stephon Diggs doesn't want to teach him a thing, and it just completely blows up for
him. I am all for that.
I think that would be good. All right, that does it for us this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Matt, let the people know where they can find you, and we can wrap this one up.
Matt, you can find me at ZazzyJet.
And you can find me at AndrewGolden_17. You can also follow the show at OKD Podcast. Thank you all one more time for stopping by, and make sure you come back soon as we continue to break down this draft class. We have the interior offensive linemen coming up next, another vastly talented group that the Jets probably will and most definitely should take a look at in this draft class. Appreciate you for coming by. We'll be back real soon. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.